It's Friday, December 3rd, and Congress has a deal. We start here. On the brink of a government shutdown, Congress reaches an agreement.
Democrats and Republicans were scrambling at the last moment to make this happen.
It's almost got blown up by a dispute over vaccine mandates. We'll explain how. Alec Baldwin says he never even pulled the trigger.
So you never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
In a dramatic exclusive, the actor and producer says the narrative that emerged from his film set was wrong, and new Omicron infections emerged from patients who were fully vaccinated.
You want to pay attention for anything that could look like a symptom.
So why does the former head of the CDC say you can trust vaccines to keep you out of the hospital more than ever? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
We started the week by saying that we could be hurtling towards a government shutdown.
A government shutdown is looming with less than 48 hours now until funding runs out.
Well, guess what? In the last 24 hours, that had not been ironed out yet. We started to get real close. At stake was a shutdown where the federal government was no longer able to pay for its own programs. The bizarre thing was, a majority of congressional members wanted to avoid this. They wanted to strike a deal. They were nearly derailed, though, by a small minority of Republicans over vaccine mandates. But last night, Congress did manage to sneak a deal across the finish line. For now, that is. Let's go straight to ABC's congressional correspondent, Rachel Scott. Rachel, what happened here?
Well, Brad, we'll talk about down to the wire. With less than 24 hours to go, the Senate finally reached a deal last night to avoid a government shutdown.
On this vote, the yeas are 69, the nays are 28, and the bill is passed.
But this was cutting it pretty close. And all of this back and forth really just had to do with two Republicans. You had Senator Roger Marshall of Kansas, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, and they were trying to block a vote to keep the government funded, all in a way to protest President Biden's vaccine mandates on private businesses. Well, turns out keeping the government funded has some pretty rare bipartisan agreement.
Yeah, we're not going to shut the government down. That makes no sense for anyone. Almost no one on either side thinks that's a good idea.
And so Democrats and Republicans were scrambling at the last moment to make this happen. They ended up reaching a deal, and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer saying that cooler heads ended up prevailing this time.
And I thank the members of this chamber for walking us back from the brink of an avoidable, needless, and costly shutdown.
Hey, explain the vaccine mandate thing. Like, what was the beef that had to be ironed out with these two Republicans?
Yeah, so in the Senate, a single senator could really hold up and delay the process. And so these two Republicans really saw this as an opportunity to have a little bit of leverage here. They're against President Biden's vaccine mandates on private businesses, on federal workers, and they were using this as an opportunity to take a stand.
No precedent exists in American history for punishing private employers who don't enforce government vaccination edicts.
They wanted a vote to essentially starve the federal government of any funding that it would take to implement President Biden's vaccine mandates on private businesses and on federal workers.
The government has no business, no authority, and no justification to make millions of Americans second-class, unemployable pariahs.
But these two senators were under immense pressure, including from Republican leadership. Nearly every single senator wanted to keep the government funded, primarily because a government shutdown right now in this moment would have some pretty dire consequences. We're talking about national parks that would be closed, TSA workers could be furloughed ahead of the busy holiday travel season. And even the CDC would experience furloughs in the middle of a pandemic. There really couldn't be a worse time for that to happen. So a deal ended up being reached. The government is now funded, crisis averted, at least until mid-February. And then we could find ourselves back here once again, Brad.
Right. Well, that's the thing. This gives you a few months. And there's still more business for Congress to hash out, including raising the debt limit. That's not just funding programs that we want to run in this country. That's paying the credit card bills that we've essentially already accumulated. There's still a question of whether Congress will agree to do that, potentially send the nation into default on some of its debts. Rachel Scott, they're at the Capitol after a sleepless night. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
So was it loaded with a real bullet or one?
I cannot tell you that.
You probably remember, after the reports of a shooting death on the set of an Alec Baldwin Western movie, there were lots of headlines about how a person was dead, another person was injured, and that it was an accident, but some of the most shocking headlines from other sources said that Alec Baldwin himself pulled the trigger. Well, in an exclusive interview with ABC News, Baldwin now says straight up, that isn't true.
It wasn't in the script for the trigger to be pulled.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
That yes, he was holding the gun, but he never, ever squeezed the trigger. Let's go to ABC's Kaylee Hartung, who's been covering the story since it broke. Kaylee, I keep hearing this bombshell clip, but I don't get it. He says he was holding the gun, but he didn't pull the trigger. But what is that? What happened then? It just went off or something?
Brad, this was a fascinating interview. George Stephanopoulos getting the first sit-down interview with Alec Baldwin since this tragedy occurred over a month ago. There were so many details in here that were heartbreaking.
I want to make sure that I don't come across like I'm the victim, because we have two victims here.
There was raw emotion.
Well, I would go to any lengths to undo what happened. I would go to any lengths to undo what happened.
But the most fascinating detail for certain was Alec Baldwin claiming he never pulled the trigger on the gun.
Well, the trigger wasn't pulled. I didn't pull the trigger.
So no. You never pulled the trigger?
No. I would never point a gun at anyone and pull a trigger at them, never.
What he's saying is he cocked the gun. He cocked the hammer of this Colt 45 revolver. He says he let go of the hammer of the gun, and the gun went off.
All of what happened on that day leading up to this event was precipitated on one idea, and that is that Helena and I had something profound in common, and that is we both assumed the gun was empty, other than those, you know, dummy rounds.
The irony in this case is that everything he was doing, it was at her direction. I mean, she was telling him what to do. They were marking this scene. It was a marking rehearsal. And she's saying, hold the gun lower, go to your right. Okay, right there. Okay, do this, do that.
Yeah.
And he was only doing that because she was telling him to.
Well, right. Several things would have to go wrong because the gun would have to go off. The assistant director, Dave Halls, by the way, has attested to Baldwin's account that his finger wasn't even on the trigger. But that still doesn't explain what a live round, a live bullet is doing in the chamber. Like, at worst, that would set off a blank bullet. So what happened there?
That has been the biggest question since day one, Brad, is how did live ammunition end up on the set of Rust?
Officials obtained a warrant to search the prop truck that stored the weapons on set.
We have recovered what we believe to be possible additional live rounds on set.
That's still the question that authorities are trying to answer, and Alec Baldwin doesn't have the answer, right? He says it was the assistant director who handed him the gun, Dave Halls.
So if I'm holding the gun and they say cut, I then hand the gun to Halls if she's not there.
And Baldwin says he recalls Halls telling him this is a cold gun, which in the film industry means this gun cannot fire anything off. And we know that the armor, Hannah Gutierrez-Rita, said she did load that gun, believing she was loading it with dummies.
Yeah, why Halls, not Hannah? Some people have said that only the armorer should be Hannah.
No. That's inaccurate. Meaning in the protocols of the business, meaning Hannah would to hand me the gun 99% of the time. No, whatever, the preponderance of the time. But when we would say cut, if Hannah was away from the set, I would hand Halls the gun.
So that makes you wonder about the ammunition on the whole on that movie set, right? Because you're only supposed to have dummy rounds and blanks. So was it labeled improperly? Did it all just sort of get mixed up and jumbled? We don't know.
Now, the warrant and the case shows investigators are checking to see if live ammo from the Albuquerque business ended up on the Rust movie set.
But we learned an interesting detail earlier this week through a search warrant that authorities were headed to a prop arsenal in Albuquerque.
After searching the business, investigators took what they believe is live ammo, an ammo cam, some photographs, and documents tied to the movie Rust.
Are you confident that PDQ did not mistakenly, accidentally, somehow send live rounds to the set of Rust?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We talked to Seth Kenny. He owns PDQ Arm and Prop.
The safety checks are in place to make sure that doesn't happen, that they actually don't get loaded into the guns.
And he explained to me in great detail, when he is sending out boxes of dummies to sets,
they get individually rattle tested before they get sent out. So if you have a box of 50, you've got to do it 50 times. And then at that point, you know they're safe to send.
You do something of a shake test. Dummies have a BB inside of them, something like that, because it doesn't have gunpowder in it, right? It's just an empty casing that from the exterior looks just like what we think of as a bullet.
Right, that ammo shop says that, you know, there were other people supplying ammo as well, but I've been wondering, Kaylee, Alec Baldwin says he doesn't feel guilty because he didn't do anything wrong. So he feels terrible, but he doesn't feel guilty. But we do keep hearing these allegations that the set was a little bit ramshackle. It was a little bit casual, just not strict enough about gun safety. The producers say, yes, it was totally fine. But if Alec Baldwin, even if he's not the director or the lead producer, if somebody of his caliber had stood up and said, listen, I'm not going on with this until we feel safer on set, wouldn't people have respected that? Like, to what extent does his responsibility go in his mind?
Alec Baldwin says he didn't have any idea that there were real safety concerns on this set. He says that the concerns that had been brought up to him by one member of the camera crew had to do with their housing.
And he said, my men need a better hotel room. There was no mention of safety issues.
He didn't say anything about the accidental discharges on set.
He didn't say anything about anything. He goes, my men need better hotel rooms.
He thought everyone was getting along fine, so much to the point that he told George Stephanopoulos on the morning of the shooting that he was sitting in a pew in that same church where just hours later the shooting occurred, and he thought, this movie has made me love making movies again.
You know, sorry. You know, people, they have their dreams. No matter how old you are, you have your dreams of people you want to work with. And this movie made me love making movies again. I really thought we were onto something.
He's actually become the latest in a growing list of actors to say he will never again use a real gun on set from now on, whether it fires blanks or not. In fact, Baldwin even took a step further than these other actors to say he can't even imagine doing a movie that has a gun in it, period. In the meantime, this fascinating interview with George Stephanopoulos up on Hulu as of this morning. Kaylee Hartung, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, Omicron he didn't. As new cases emerge, a former CDC chief has some advice after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Experts said the Omicron variant wasn't just about to start popping up in the U.S. They said it was already here. Well, sure enough, in the last 48 hours, we've had that confirmed. First in San Francisco, then in Minnesota, then yesterday in Colorado.
And our public health laboratory has indeed found the variant of the SARS-CoV-2 virus known as Omicron.
And yesterday, as expected, President Biden laid out some big new proposals with which to respond.
We're going to fight this variant with science and speed.
There were three main highlights here. Number one, if you're traveling from a foreign country into the U.S., you've got to get a COVID test within 24 hours of that flight.
To give us more time to stop the spread and study a new variant.
Vaccinated, unvaccinated, you got to get your nose swabbed within a day of taking off. Number two, not enough Americans are getting their booster shots. So the White House is telling Americans they will make it easier to find that next dose.
And if you want to know exactly where to go, text your zip code to 438829.
And number three, Welcome to the return of widespread testing by everyone all the time, except this time you should be able to at least do it from your home.
This winter, you'll be able to test for free in the comfort of your home and have some peace of mind.
And as important as all these prescriptions are, Americans are still asking, great, but what do I do to keep my family safe right now? What should I know? We got an expert with us to tell you the answer to some of these questions. Dr. Richard Besser is the former acting head of the CDC. Dr. Besser, let me start you with a travel question, right? Like, my sister just flew from San Francisco to Florida. We now know San Francisco had the first known case of the Omicron variant. Should Floridians be worried? Like, should they be isolating my sister right now?
You know, Brad, the reaction to the Omicron variant, I think it's really important that we take this seriously. I think it's really important that we do all we can to learn about whether people who have had COVID and are vaccinated are at risk and how severe this is.
That unknown driving crowds to vaccination sites.
We have this on.
Okay. Right now, we have widespread transmission in the United States of the Delta variant. And I'm finding a lot of the conversation right now is assuming we're in a situation where things are good and they could get bad because of Omicron. From my perspective, things right now are still pretty bad. We are losing close to 1,000 people every single day from the Delta variant.
In New York State, 37 hospitals with less than 10% capacity and facing staffing shortages will start postponing elective surgeries again. And in Michigan, there are more patients hospitalized now than at any other time in the pandemic.
I get a sense that there's so much COVID fatigue in the nation that we've accepted that, that 1,000 people dying a day is okay.
Anyone who's thinking of traveling on a plane, on a train, anywhere around other travelers, get vaccinated. It's more urgent than ever to do that.
Whether Omicron is here or not, people should be wearing masks when they're traveling. If people are traveling and they're coming into a household where there's someone at high risk, they should get a home test and do that test. They should pay attention when they're going indoors to a crowded venue that isn't well ventilated and be wearing a mask. These are things that I'm just finding people are doing less of.
Right.
And because Omicron is here, it's like, oh my God, we could see COVID. Well, we've got COVID right now.
But if Omicron is like, yeah, that's the least of our problems. We just got to get people vaccinated for regular COVID. Why am I here? Like, I didn't hear this level of concern from scientists about the Lambda variant or about the Mu variant, right? Like, in your mind, is there a reason why this has already gotten so much attention and so much concern?
Yes. And I think it is very important that we take this seriously. And the reason for that is that when the South African scientists looked at the genetic makeup of this virus, they saw a number of mutations.
We now know that Omicron has far more mutations than any previous variant.
And they saw mutations in the area of what's called the spike protein. And the vaccines that we've been using to protect ourselves from COVID target that spike protein. And so the concern was, if this variant is so different from the variants that have been around before, maybe our vaccines won't be as effective.
Right.
Maybe the monoclonal antibodies that are a therapy for this won't be as effective. And until we answer that question, we should be really careful. But I'm reacting differently to that than if I'd heard there are two people in intensive care units in the US who were identified who both had Omicron. One scientist who was raising the possibility that if this variant spreads easier than Delta and becomes the more dominant strain and turns out to be less severe, it could actually, there could be some value there in that you're seeing a replacement of a strain that is quite severe with one that is less severe.
And then if you get it, that's very sad. You got some pretty bad symptoms, but whatever. But at least that probably immunizes you to the more dangerous strains.
Exactly. Provide some protection. So there's so many things that need to be answered here. It is important to pay attention. It is important to pay attention when you're traveling, when you're moving from place to place. But I wouldn't treat your sister, getting back to your sister who's going from San Francisco to Florida, I wouldn't treat her any differently. She should be treated like any other person traveling cross country and recognize that, you've been around a lot of different people. You don't know who you've been around who could have had COVID, who wasn't vaccinated. And so you want to pay attention for anything that could look like a symptom and get tested if you're developing symptoms.
The individual with the Omicron variant had attended an anime convention last month with 53,000 other people.
The Minnesota case was advised to isolate from others and is doing so.
Yeah, but just so I'm clear, like the Minneapolis guy tested positive after attending this big conference in New York that had a vaccine requirement, that masks were required. He was fully vaccinated and apparently had a booster shot. So, I mean, it's not a given he got the virus at this conference, but if this is something that can just hit vaccinated people, would this country have to create a new vaccine for this variant? And if so, how quickly can we do that?
Yeah, so you can't answer that question because you don't know, you know, if there were 10,000 people exposed at that conference and 10 people got Omicron, well, that's very different from whether, you know, he was the one person who was exposed and he got sick. So that we don't know right now. And it makes a big difference.
For Omicron and what we have now, do you have the facilities to do both and do them rapidly?
We do. We do have the capacity to do both and do them fast.
One of the exciting things about the technology that's been used for the Pfizer-Moderna vaccines, this mRNA technology, is that it can be adapted really quickly to making new vaccines.
So you're sort of braced right now for what might be coming.
We absolutely are. Yeah.
The other piece of it that I think is really important is that it was developed in large part with U.S. tax dollars to the NIH. And I would like to see, if there is a new vaccine that's required, that the public benefits from that, and that the public, when I say public, the global public, and we do a better job of distributing new vaccines if they're required to the global community. Because one thing is clear from this Omicron situation is that no one is safe until everyone is safe. And we've done a terrible job as a global community protecting people in lower income countries. It puts everyone at risk, and we need to address that in much better ways than we have to date.
Right. In the meantime, the U.S. seems like it's trying to slow international flights, not necessarily halt them. And they're not really willing to put many more restrictions on domestic travel, at least not right now. Dr. Richard Besser, thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure, Brad.
Okay, let's step away again real quick. When we come back, Make the Yuletide Gay doesn't just have to be a song lyric. One Last Thing is next. And one last thing. 'Tis the season. If you watch the Hallmark Channel, you know which season I'm talking about.
You've only known me for 6 hours and you're telling me you love me.
I said I might be falling in love with you. Still too much, huh?
That's right. TV holiday movies are dropping right now, left and right. But after years of complaints about a startlingly narrow view of the holidays, this might be the most inclusive holiday movie slate ever.
How is there even a single gay man in this town?
That's a great question for you to ask on your first date.
For the first time, a Netflix Christmas movie will revolve around two gay characters. It's called Single All the Way. Hallmark actually broke this barrier last year, but critics have long held a litany of complaints about that industry standard bearer, including that for a channel that claims to represent everybody, isn't it kind of weird that Hallmark barely acknowledges Hanukkah?
I got the results of my DNA test this week. I am 50% Jewish.
Last year, they tried a Hanukkah-centric movie about a woman who suddenly finds out she's Jewish and then has fun lighting a menorah. But in a weird scheduling debacle, producers plan to release it after the Jewish holiday. This year's effort, which has been described as the most proudly Jewish film in the Hallmark canon, is set to debut tonight. But religion and sexual orientation aside, there's an even more basic issue of visibility in these movies.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, George!
For years, audiences have been asking, why are these little towns that love Christmas so much so white?
Merry Christmas, you wonderful old Billy and Lone!
That is the last major development this year, a boom in holiday films portraying people of color. There's still lots of debates over whether the entire medium needs a shakeup, but in Netflix's Single All the Way, Philemon Chambers just became the first black man to star in a gay Christmas movie. And that, his fans say, would have been a Christmas miracle just a few years ago. I just feel like I never see myself represented in these movies because everyone's families look calm and orderly. Start Here is produced by Kelly Therese, Brenda Salinas-Baker, Lewis Millman, Madeline Wood, David Toledo, Jen Newman, Vika Aronson, Tara Gimbel, and Lauren Efron. Ariel Chester is our social media producer. Josh Cohan is our podcast manager. I'm our managing editor. Liz Alessi is our executive producer. Thanks to Lakia Brown, John Newman, Elizabeth Russo, and Stacia Deshishku. Special thanks this week to Eric Strauss, Joy Piazza Rupert, and guest host extraordinaire Mary Alice Parks. I'm Brad Milkey. See you next week.